I pushed my soul in a deep dark hole, and then I followed it in. I watched myself crawling out as I was crawling in. I got up so tight I couldn't unwind. I saw so much I broke my mind. I just dropped in see what condition my condition was in.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
Is it true?
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and, you know, anyway.
Someone painted April Fool in big black letters on a dead end sign. Had my foot on the gas as I left the road and blew out my mind. 8 miles out of Memphis and I got no fare. 8 miles straight up downtown somewhere. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. I said I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight we're going to talk about the 1998 hit film, The Big Lebowski. Was it a hit film? I hope it was a hit film.
It wasn't as big as Fargo. So the movie was budgeted for $15 million, but it grossed $17 million. So one would submit that probably not the best.
It had to have done a huge amount of video.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Rental and sales.
Yeah, because opening weekend was only $5 million. So.
Yeah, well, you know, the Coens have found out that they're not all hits.
Well, but this is, I mean... This is a great movie.
Okay, well, let's just start with this. So, Brother Jay, tell me about your first reaction and your history of this movie.
I don't remember the first time I saw this movie. It's been something that I've seen. I watch it every couple of years because I just think it's hilarious. It's so strange, and there's a lot of layers going on, and it's just so over the top. It makes some of it is just so ridiculous. It makes me laugh. The first time I saw it, I thought, it was Annette Bening. I didn't realize it was Tara Reid.
Oh, that's funny. That doesn't speak well of Tara Reid.
Well, because the first time you see her in the movie, she's behind sunglasses and she's done up, and so it's hard to.
Oh no, I agree with you. I just Drew.
I first saw this movie when it the first time it hit video, and I didn't really like it. And it's been so long that in my mind. I didn't confuse the Tara Reid character because I totally forgot about the Tara Reid character. But in my mind, I had confused Julianne Moore with Lena Olin.
Ah.
And watching it this time around, I still didn't like it.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's funny. If anything, I think the first time I saw it was probably still on video. I don't think I saw it in the theater. And I saw it on video, and I don't think... I liked it much on video. I think at the time I thought it was like quirky for the sake of being quirky. But I really love this movie.
So what changed? Was that Ice Maker, by the way?
No, I think that was something being dropped from upstairs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think anything changed. I think I changed.
Well, that's changed. That counts.
Maybe I have a better appreciation. Oh, okay, so... As far as the Coens are concerned, Ethan Coen wrote a book called, is it Garden of Evil? Garden of Eden. Garden of Eden. Gates of Eden. I don't know. I think it was Garden of Eden. Something. He wrote a book of short stories, and they're basically just character pieces, and they're all performed on audio. It's only available on cassette right now. I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Gates of Eden.
Yes. Are you looking at it right now?
I'm looking at the cover.
Tell me about the narrators, because it is everybody from the Coen movies. John Goodman gives maybe the best spoken word performance I've ever heard. Of a story that I love.
I'm just looking at the book cover, so I don't have
William
any.
H. Macy does a story. Steve Buscemi does a story, I believe. It's just great. They really kind of inhabit their own little world. And I had read somewhere that this, you know, the whole thing about the Big Lebowski was supposed to be kind of a riff on the Big Sleep. So I actually watched the Big Sleep this week again. Before I watched The Big Lebowski. And even though I'll put in the notes a link to a like an infographic chart of the things that are similar, really, Raymond Chandler wrote The Big Sleep. And in the movie, again, it's really all the Raymond Chandler books, and actually the Dashiell Hammett books as well, but all those noir things, the plots are super complicated and twisty, and it doesn't really matter. Even the author said it didn't matter. It was all basically putting your hero in a situation where he could be quippy. So all the MacGuffins don't really matter too much. And that was kind of what I found to be the only big similarity between The Big Sleep and The Big Lebowski is The Big Sleep. I still don't think I understand exactly what was going on through that the whole entire movie. And The Big Lebowski, I know I have a better idea what was going on. But again, it's all these like three or four different factions working kind of against each other or parallel to each other. And your main character doesn't really know what's going on, but kind of stumbles back and forth with either suaveness in the case of Philip Marlowe, or at least like good natured sarcasm, or in the Big Lebowski sense, the dude just goes through life just kind of being the dude.
This is kind of a poor man's, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, as always, the Coens are really stylish. Let's just get that out of the way. It's a beautiful movie.
Well, and I always forget when I watch this movie on DVD and the previews come up on it, because I have an old school standard DVD, that Burn After Reading comes up.
Oh, I tried to watch that once and I could not do it.
I thought that was decent. It wasn't great. But then I also forget that he wrote The Man Who Wasn't There.
Yep.
And the Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, yeah. No, they at Blood Simple. I mean, they had a lot of really good movies. But, although, I think, Drew, you'd expressed...
Miller's Crossing.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you've expressed that that you're not necessarily a Coen Brothers fan?
Yeah, I don't think I like wacky Coen Brothers. I like more serious Coen Brothers.
Did you see like Hail Caesar?
Fargo and No Country for Old Men and Miller's Crossing, although I do like the Hudsucker Proxy quite a bit. And that's pretty wacky.
Oh, that's just as wacky as The Big Lebowski, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe.
Which is more wacky?
Oh, I think the Hudsucker Proxy... I mean, I haven't seen the Hudsucker Proxy recently, but if memory serves, it's pretty wacky. I mean, it's just as wacky.
I think it's more wacky than this.
Well, I mean, this has full-on Busby Berkeley dance numbers in unconscious scenes.
Yeah, but the Hudsucker Proxy is much more. There are layers of jokes that are built upon that pay off later in the movie, and this movie doesn't have quite that depth, I don't think.
It's pretty rich, though. I mean, this movie is just eternally quotable, as far as I'm concerned. And this is based on the fact that, by the way, I don't like the dude character. Fellow podcaster, Jeff Bridges, who plays the dude. He's great. I mean, he's always great. Although he's a little bit of a caricature of himself these days, I think. But I wouldn't want to hang out with the dude or any of the dude's friends. So
I think he's meant to be unlikable.
No, I think he's supposed to be like your likable, scruffy guy. Like you kind of like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
He writes a check for under a dollar at the Ralph's grocery store.
And what date did he write it?
I didn't even pay attention.
September 11th, 1991. That's just a
69 cents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a monster.
He doesn't have a job. He's a druggie.
Yeah, he's an aging hippie who's still a stoner.
I also forget that it's Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, my God. Yes, the very young, I don't know how you would call him. You know, he doesn't have the gravity of his later years, and that's a good thing.
He's got that nerdy high school graduate, pretty boy, gotta make everybody happy, kiss ass going
on. Oh, yeah, totally. He's a complete kiss ass.
He's Lebowski Jr., right?
What do you mean?
The way he looks and the way that they frame them in the movie, he looks like a younger version of the Big Lebowski.
Oh, okay.
No, I just got that he was just a assistant. I didn't get that they were like really.
Yeah, I didn't get that either, but it makes sense, I suppose.
He seemed like more than just a toady, maybe like an illegitimate son.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah, that could be. Again, very twisty. So this movie starts out. Again, this is, we guys agree that this is a beautiful movie.
Yeah. Like,
soup to nuts, 100% beautiful.
Especially the I don't know what you want to call them, the cutaway scenes, the dream sequences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Those are fantastic. I mean, it's so kitschy.
This is a well-crafted movie with some amazing special effects in a movie you wouldn't really expect special effects. Like the whole filming the internal mechanics of the bowling alley. That was pretty impressive. The fantasy sequences were amazing to look at, although they got pretty tiresome, I think, by the end of the movie.
And, you know, the set design, just the detail, like in, you know, the dude's house and, you know, the pictures on the wall of the Big Lebowski's mansion. Just every...
And the costumes.
Oh, yeah.
The costumes were great.
Of course.
Everybody had their own very specific look in this movie.
Yeah. Thanks to costumer Mary Zofries, wife of podcaster and comedian Murray Valeriano, the Road Stories podcast. Check it out on iTunes. Give it 5 stars. It's great.
I just thought the whole introduction of meeting Maude and that whole sequence, that's beautiful. That's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that that's where the batshit crazy comes in, too. So, this whole movie starts, and we don't have to necessarily go scene by scene, although I could. It starts with the song Tumblin' Tumbleweeds, and we hear the voiceover by The Stranger, played by Roadhouse's Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
And he delivers, as always. I mean, he's just great. His voice is perfect.
No, Sam...
Drew, you're out of your depth.
No, Sam Elliott was probably the best part of this movie.
Oh, I think John Turturro was maybe the best part of this movie.
No. No. That's a valid opinion, but you're wrong.
So you don't think Ben Gazzara as the pornographist is the best part of this movie?
Oh, no. Come on. If we're going to do the... I mean, John Goodman is the best part of this movie. Peter Stramari is fantastic in this movie.
The three nihilist German dudes. Oh,
Flea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I dug a little deep, and there's some crazy-ass conspiracies, and not even conspiracies, but just weirdness of people trying to, like, make things appear to be connected that really aren't. But I got to see a lot of videos that had, like, freeze frames of some of the things, and... The Nihilists band, their album, he pulls out the the vinyl album.
Mm-hmm. Autobahn whatever it was.
The Autobahn, and it's like Bed of Nails or something. But if he actually flips it over briefly, and you get to see all the song titles, and it's all these like crazy, like sort of short but like sex related titles, except the last one is Edelweiss Club Mix. So it's that kind of level of detail, which I think is great. But yeah, so we were introduced to the dude, Jeff Bridges, whose real name in the movie is Jeffrey Lebowski, but he always goes by the dude. And like most of the characters in this movie, he is based on a real person or a combination of several real people. But he is just walking through Ralph's in his clear flip-flops and bathrobe. And by the way, Jeff Bridges brought most of his own wardrobe to the movie.
Of course he did.
And we get a little, we actually, for a strange reason, although I think ultimately it works, but you know, normally you'd want to kind of make your movie evergreen, but they had him right there and they timestamped it with President George H.W. Bush talking about Kuwait, the aggression will not stand. And when the dude gets home with his, half gallon of half and half. Which, did it bother you that he always had milk on his mustache?
Are you kidding? I'm used to that.
Well, he had like 9 white Russians during this movie, and he was constantly wiping milk off his mustache.
Yeah. Hey, that's life with a mustache, dude.
That is not what bothered me about this movie.
Are you going to jump in when we get to it, or is it just as a piece you didn't like it?
I'll speak my mind when appropriate.
Okay. Well, so we meet the dude and we find out his bohemian lifestyle, and he answers the door to find 2 goons that come in and duck his head in a toilet and say that he owes them money. Or actually, he owes Jackie Treehorn money. Money that his wife, Bunny, had borrowed or whatever.
Actually, they slam him in the toilet so hard the half and half spurts everywhere.
Yes. And the thugs are played by Philip Moon from Deadwood, plays Wu, and Mark Pellegrino from Quantico and Lost plays the other guy.
The dude who pisses on the rug is Wu?
Yes.
Holy crap. Wow.
I don't get it. Is his character named Wu in Deadwood?
Yeah, there's a Wu in Deadwood.
You're so dry, I don't know whether you're making a joke or not.
I'm not.
Okay. All right. Okay. Strangely now. So, yeah. So it determines that, of course, that this is all a misunderstanding, Three's Company style.
His name was Lee in Deadwood, by the way.
Ah, okay. Anyway, they manage to, they intentionally woo pees on the rug.
Woo wees.
There we go. Yes. Saying ever thus to deadbeats Lebowski. And finally, Lebowski convinces him that he's not the right guy. He doesn't have a wife. He lives in a crappy apartment or house or whatever. And he doesn't owe anybody any money. And they realize that they've done the wrong thing. So decide to just leave. But, you know, by saving face, they still are tough guys. So then dude goes to the bowling alley and meets up with the rest of his posse. John Goodman plays Walter Sobchak in fantastic form. I don't know if you realize, but Walter Sobchak is based roughly on screenwriter and director John Milius, who wrote Apocalypse Now with Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he's got sort of everything relates to Vietnam. He's got a severe haircut, and he likes guns. And then we have Theodore Donald Donnie Karabastos is his name, although he just called Donnie during the whole thing, played by Steve Buscemi in an intentionally opposite character as in Fargo. In Fargo, his character never stopped talking. In this movie, every time he tries to talk, John Goodman tells him to shut up. And it's a running
Shut
thing.
The fuck up.
Yes.
This is one of those things that really bugs me about this movie. Is it's really self-indulgent. So if you know that the purpose of this running gag is to reference one of their other movies, great. It's nice and clever. But within the context of the movie itself, it just got old really quickly. And not not even enough to the point where it came back around and was funny again. It just seemed like a waste. You know, if you didn't know that connection to why they were doing that to Steve Buscemi's character. And maybe that's just me being a cranky old get off my lawn dude. But, you know, that and, you know, some of the dream sequences that went on too long and just the general wackiness for the sake of being wacky, it just really added up to being too much for me to enjoy.
See, I dislike Steve Buscemi so much that having John Goodman constantly tell him to shut the fuck up was really satisfying to me.
And I think that it, for me, it did kind of come around when he finally gets to I Am the Walrus. And
I figure it's easy money, you know. It's all pretty harmless. She probably kidnapped herself.
Huh? Oh. What do you mean, dude?
Rug Piers did not do this. Look at it. A young trophy wife marries this guy for his money. She figures he isn't giving her enough. You know, she owes money all over town.
That fucking
it's all
bitch.
Goddamn fake, man. It's like Lenin said. You look for the person who will benefit and, you know.
I am the walrus?
You know, you'll, you know what I'm trying to say.
I am the walrus.
Fucking bitch.
Oh, yeah.
I am the walrus.
That's shut the fuck up, Donnie. D.I. Lenin. Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov.
What the fuck is he talking about?
I thought that was a great button on the whole thing. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. This movie is all about self-indulgence. 100%. It's not subtle. Like, Fargo, I was actually, if I remember correctly, and it's been a little bit, but Fargo is actually pretty subtle in what they were doing. Like, this is a wacky movie, and Fargo was, like, an actual, like, mystery thriller that also had weird elements to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you took individual pieces of Fargo out of context, it would look just as zany as some of the things in this movie. But overall, that movie was a lot more subdued, and so I think it worked better.
Yeah. Yeah, so then we find out that the, he goes and tells Walter and Donnie about the thing about his rug, and that's where we have the running line about his rug really pulled the room together, which is kind of fun.
And we also have that line somewhere about, you know, about how he's got emotional problems. You mean beyond pacifism? Which is, I think it's a great line.
Well, and we learn early on that Walter's got some problems. I mean, Walter's hilarious, but Walter is unhinged. But we find out some important exposition that there is a big, important millionaire guy named Jeffrey Lebowski. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Dude's going to go and have a little chat with him because, hey, you know, the rug really pulled the room together. And B, you know, the aggression cannot stand. So he goes up and we get to meet old Lebowski versus young Lebowski.
So the character of the dude is, he's kind of this loser stoner, but he's very smart. He's clever. You know, when he's getting his head dunked in the toilet, he's pretty sarcastic about it. You know, he tells the guy, I don't know, your money might be down there. Let me take another look. I mean, that's like, you know, that's some he's got some stones on him for, you know, being beaten up and drowned in your own toilet to be quippy at that point.
Well, but this whole movie is about delivering quippy lines.
Yeah, and then when he realizes that that the big Lebowski isn't going to help him out, he decides to fuck it, and he's going to be clever and actually con his way into taking a rug home. So he's smart, he's clever, so it makes no sense that he would be such close friends with a dude like Walter. And there's no reason he would listen to Walter when Walter has his crazy plans to do stuff. I mean, I can kind of go along with the fact that maybe the dude just, he's friends with everybody. But no, he's really close to Walter, and that doesn't make any sense. Because Walter is a bad dude.
Is he? Why? He's just a goofy dude.
Oh no, he's a troubled dude.
Yeah.
You don't have a troubled friend that sometimes you know you have under your wing?
I would not let anybody like Walter influence decisions in my life. I would certainly not take him along on a caper.
Well, but you don't spend a lot of time smoking pot.
That's true. Yeah,
and,
I don't.
And Walter inserts himself into the caper.
Well, Walter thinks that he's going to get a cut of the money.
Oh, yeah, no, Walter has other agendas.
Yeah, Walter is about getting rich quick.
Well, yeah, again, Walter has some issues. Okay, so at the Lebowski mansion, we meet Brandt, Philip Seymour Hoffman, which is great. He is like sycophant supreme. And we meet the big Lebowski, played by David Huddleston, rest in peace, 2016, who's Grandpa Arnold from The Wonder Years. And the big Lebowski is against everything that the dude stands for.
I'm trying to think what else I've seen David Huddleston in. What other?
I think he's been in a bunch of stuff, but I can't. Nothing springs to mind besides The Wonder Years.
Oh, he's been in The West Wing.
Oh, I'm sure he's played every senator and judge ever.
Oh, he was in Joe's Apartment. Star Trek The Next Generation. Wait,
the MTV movie Joe's Apartment?
I believe so.
Hey, Drew and I saw that in the theater.
We all saw it in the theater.
The Fireweed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he steals a rug from the Lebowski Mansion, and we also meet the young blonde.
Well, he commandeers Brandt to steal the rug.
Yes.
With a great bit of misdirection.
Oh, yeah.
It's brilliant.
Oh, it's great, yeah.
Never underestimated the motivation of potheads, because they will do some cunning things.
So then we meet Tara Reid, who plays Bunny, who's just the worst, but in a fun way. And we meet Uli, Peter Stormare, who's actually in the pool, but he's a nihilist, so he won't hurt anybody. It's funny. Can you think of another famous nihilist lately? Mucinex's own T.J. Miller.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's hearing him talk is interesting. Again, I don't think I'd want to hang around T.J. Miller either, but it's interesting.
Why? Why don't you think so?
Because I think he's a weirdo who's also, since he's a nihilist, he doesn't really believe in anything.
Well, he believes in money.
Well, no, he makes money. I don't know if it's his driving force. He's just a weirdo. I don't know. I don't know enough about him, I guess.
Didn't he have a near-fatal brain tumor?
He did, yes. And he, or maybe an aneurysm or something. Oh, and he dear. Also was citizens arrested by some kind of car service slash taxi slash Uber driver of some kind.
People still do that, citizens arrest.
Yeah, in this case they did. Yeah.
Isn't that just asking to get shot?
Well, no, I mean, what you do is you're basically, because the officer didn't see the crime, you have to be the arresting party for like a misdemeanor crime. I mean, I don't think he held T.J. Miller against his will, but he stuck around until the police got there, and then they did a private person arrest, which is what it is. So, anyway. And then we go back to the bowling alley. And Walter brings his ex-wife's dog. And Walter, as Walter is talking to the dude, opposing team, one of the members, Smokey, played by Jimmy Dale Gilmore, a country folk singer, apparently he steps a toe over the line when he's, what is it called? When he's rolling, when he's, what do you call it? His throw, his turn?
I don't bowl.
Yeah, I don't bowl well. Bowling is fine. It's kind of cool. No, it's not cool. That's not true. It's just interesting. Yeah, so poor Smokey, even though he got an 8, Walter's like, nope, you faulted. You had a foot over the line.
Yeah, you rolled your foot over the line.
So, and they're in league play, so Walter's not having it. So much so that Walter pulls out a gun, which the dude reacts to appropriately, I think. I think there's a lot of the dude just kind of like reacting to things around him that he can't control that are way above him, you know, way beyond his ability to fix by like whining, which sounds a little more harsh than I really mean it. Cause again, I like this movie a lot. So I like the fact that they walk out of the bowling alley, and as they're having their conversation, the police arrive behind them and go in with their guns drawn into the bowling alley. Which is pretty fun.
Yeah, but they're so nonchalant about it. It doesn't even occur to them that the police are there for them.
Oh, of course.
And they probably, you know, just in the background.
So we get a couple of scenes where we meet the dude's landlord, who also has an interpretive dance routine that he wants to do to see.
And give him notes on.
Yes.
Oh, so terrible.
Well, all this is like a slam on L.A. culture, I'm sure. But the dude is summoned back to the Lebowski mansion. At first, you think it's going to be reprimanded for stealing the rug, but no, it turns out they're fine with him taking the other rug. They just need his services to be the bag man to deliver money to these guys who have kidnapped Bunny.
Somehow they believe he will be the criminal mastermind go-between.
Well, ultimately we learn they want him as a patsy.
But that's not how they deliver it.
Oh, no, not at all. No, they have him being, okay, he can deliver the money and also confirm that the guys who that he delivers the money to are the same people that peed on his rug. And that's where we met, or that's where we go back to the bowling alley and meet Jesus, John Turturro from Rounders, who is, he's just hilarious.
Fucking Santana. That creep can roll, man.
Yeah, but he's a pervert, dude.
Yeah.
No. He's a sex offender with a record. He did 6 months in Chino for exposing himself to an 8-year-old.
Huh.
When he moved to Hollywood, he had to go door to door to tell everyone he was a pederast.
What's a pederast, Walter?
Shut the fuck up, Donnie. My point is...
Are you ready to be fucked, man? I see you roll your way into the semis. Dios mio, man. Liam and me, we're gonna fuck you up.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Let me tell you something, Pandeo. You pull any of your crazy shit with us, you flash your piece out on the lanes, I'll take it away from you and stick it up your ass and pull the fucking trigger till it goes click.
Jesus.
You said it, man. Nobody fucks with the Jesus.
Eight-year-olds, dude.
You can tell that his character was supposed to have a bigger role in this, but they kind of had to cut it down. But because he did a lot of, like, preparing and, like, costuming and stuff for what turned out to be a pretty small role.
And the most dirty sexual ball polishing scene in any movie I've ever seen.
Oh, everything he does is cringeworthy. He's just the worst.
You think he was supposed to have a bigger role in the movie?
Yeah, I know he was supposed to have a bigger role. Yep. He was promised a bigger role, but then they, for whatever reason, had to cut it down. They let him come up with a bunch of stuff, including his little winning dance where he dances backwards. He says he was inspired by Muhammad Ali. Rest in peace, 2016.
He's really obsessed with putting things up Walter's ass.
He is.
Yes, he is. Walter later has a little ass thing going on. But back at the apartment, dude is laying on his new rug listening to his cassette. And like side A is like what, like whale noises or some meditation thing?
No, I think this is when he's listening to a bowling tournament.
Oh,
yeah, he's listening to strikes at a bowling competition.
Bowling competition on side A, and side B is just marked Bob, because it's a Bob Dylan song that comes up when he regains consciousness. So he opens his eyes and sees a man and two, or a woman and two men, and they knock him unconscious. And that's where we have the first dream sequence, where he's chasing the rug.
I was surprised they didn't use Steppenwolf for this.
Steppenwolf? Okay. Mm-hmm. Steppenwolf.
That's how you would say it in German.
Yeah, they're not German. They're from Pasadena or something.
I'm just
saying. That's funny. I don't know. Actually, it turns out I don't know where Steppenwolf is from. They could be from Kansas, for all I know.
They're from Canada.
Oh, perhaps. Yeah, and I don't think so. No, I think Drew's just making that up.
No, Toronto.
For real?
Yes.
That's hysterical. So what Steppenwolf song would you have playing? Magic Carpet Ride?
Magic Carpet Ride.
Okay, yeah.
Born
yeah.
to be Wild. For sure.
This movie had good music in it.
It had a lot of music, too.
It had really good music
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is where I first heard the Kenny Rogers and the First Editions Just Dropped In.
Oh.
I love that song.
Yeah.
It's the opening song on our podcast this week.
Well, awesome. When I heard it, I couldn't remember where I've heard it before.
You need to see the video where they play it on, I think, Midnight Special or one of those shows where
I think you sent me the video to watch at one point, which is where I've seen it before. Because somehow you've mentioned this song before, but I don't know why.
I love it. And Kenny Rogers, first of all, plays bass. I did not know that. Because I've only seen him as a like wireless microphone like singer with the background band like not even lit up on the stage. But he also looks stoned to his gills. And nervous. Yeah.
Well, have you seen him lately?
Yeah, he's had some work done.
Lots of work done. He looks like a strange doll version of himself.
He and Meg Ryan should have those black plastic things on their arms.
I was thinking like the Muppets. Angie Dickinson. Is it? Who's the model?
Oh, Janice Dickinson.
Janice Dickinson, yeah. With this strange super stretch canvas face. Yes.
No, I think Meg Ryan is, well, except for, of course, Priscilla Presley. Who's the worst?
Oh, I haven't seen her. Really.
She's so bad. She was fairly pretty before, but horrible. She looks like the cat lady now. The lady who wanted to turn herself into a cat.
I wish that more people felt comfortable just aging. I mean, I think it's beautiful to age, so.
Well, Hollywood doesn't.
It's unfortunate. I know, but they don't have to. But I understand.
Yeah, beauty pays the bills, camera. Man. Even Tara Reid, also victim of plastic surgery. Poor thing. Also, Kanye's mom.
She died, yeah. Right, from it?
RIP, 2012. I don't know.
Way to bring down the podcast. Jeez.
So he wakes up after this fever dream or whatever, and his beeper's going off, and the rug has disappeared from underneath him. So somebody's taken his rug again, his new rug.
That was one of two times I chuckled during this movie, when he realized the rug was gone, and it was just like... Oh, man.
Can I guess the other time?
You may guess.
Because I laughed out loud unexpectedly. I had even done notes before I watched the movie again, and I still laughed out loud when he like dropped the roach in his lap and then crashed his car.
Nope.
The fact that when we went sideways in that little street and then slammed into the garbage can, and the car just lived, the back the of the car just lifts up off the ground.
I laughed so hard at that. I still do every time. So I'm with you.
It's hilarious.
Even when you know it's coming, it's hilarious. Oh, yeah.
There's something about that kind of stuff.
Because it's a great sight gag. He does it so well.
Oh, yeah.
He acts it so well.
That was not it.
Okay. So we get back to the mansion, and we found out the kidnapper's demands, and they give him a briefcase that has $1 million in it. And a portable phone. And the portable phone is great.
Semi-portable
phone. Yeah, in today's world, it's hilarious.
It's one of those old-school, like, bag cell phones.
Yes, with the big old shoulder strap on it. And maybe even an antenna coming out of it.
That probably would have cooked his testicles.
But he wasn't using them. So... he's instructed to go alone to the drop-off point. But, of course, he picks up Walter... And Walter is ready to go. He's got plans. He's going with. And there's some fun shenanigans.
With his dirty underwear. Yes.
Were you waiting to find out that Walter never went to Vietnam?
Yes.
Yeah, I was. They never do that to you, though, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see where they would have. But, so the kidnappers call and tell him to bring the money and no funny stuff. And we have the scene of the Uzi and, you know...
That's Flea on the phone, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
It's one of the three guys. Peter Stormare.
Flea and Torsten Voss.
From Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Never seen it.
It's what you'd expect from a Rob Schneider movie.
I would expect not to watch a Rob Schneider movie.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
There's definitely no vaccinations in it.
Yeah, so they fuck up the handoff, and they decide, well, we're just going to go bowling. And I like the fact that the phone keeps ringing constantly, and he's not answering it because he knows who it is. It's Brant and the Big Lebowski calling to see what happened.
Yeah, they want to know how it went.
The dude is not happy because the dude is sure that Bunny's going to be killed, and Walter's like, no. But... clearly, Walter is unhinged, so you can't rely on Walter to be the voice of reason. And then we find out that the bowling tournament, their next round of the bowling tournament takes place on Saturday, which is not acceptable to Walter because of Shomer Shabbos.
It's too much.
Too much, you think?
It's just too much.
Okay.
It's too much.
And then they leave.
They don't need it.
They leave the bowling alley to find out that the dude's car is missing with the briefcase in it. And he's still, all the while, even though he has to walk home, all the while the phone is still ringing unanswered. And that's where we have Walter calls the, dude calls the police to take the report of the stolen vehicle. And on his answering machine, there's a recording from Maud Lebowski, Julianne Moore from Children of Men, our mother's least favorite actress, saying that she's the one that took the rug and has sent a car to pick the dude up from his apartment. Which is nice, because the cops had noticed the rug had been stolen, and the younger cop is happy to hear that the rug part at least is solved.
Yeah, and in what day and age now would you ever have two cops show up to investigate a stolen vehicle report?
Exactly. None.
Yeah.
So the dude is brought to a huge studio, and we meet Maud.
Via zipline.
Which is so funny. I love that
scene. It is hilarious.
And all of Maud's art is hilarious. It's crazy feminist art.
Are you afraid of vagina?
It's so funny. So, we find out that Maud is the daughter of the Big Lebowski, and the rug has sentimental value to her. We also meet her assistant, Knox Harrington, played by David Thewlis. Is that how you say his name? From Harry Potter?
I don't know.
Is he in that first scene? I just remembered him later.
Well, he definitely is
sitting
later.
In the chair the whole time.
I don't know if you see him in the first scene, but yeah, you definitely see him later when he's sitting in the chair laughing at the dude.
He's my favorite character in the movie, by the way.
Ah, is that where you laughed out loud?
No.
Okay. Did you laugh out loud when we popped the videotape in the machine and we got to see log jamming?
No.
Okay. Where we see Bunny Lebowski and Uli, the German nihilist, who's credited as Karl Hungus. Was that the part where you laughed?
No, but that movie looked hilarious.
Oh, yes. So we find out, Maud says that, okay, the $1 million was actually illegally taken out of the Little Lebowski Urban Achievers Fund. Because as we find out, the Big Lebowski is not a big rich guy. She just lets him live in the house. It was all her mom's money. So all this puffery and looking down on the dude, really, the guy doesn't have any money. It was all a front. It's all a facade. So Maud wants the dude to get the money back. You guys, man, George Michael went so much more smoothly. That, by the way, was the first podcast I did where I didn't have any notes. And oh my God, you can tell. I was struggling to put a sentence together at several occasions.
It turned out great.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great episode.
Yeah, I think it was pretty good too. I'm pretty proud of it too. But not for my vocal part. I will take credit for behind-the-scenes editing, but that's about it for that one.
It was over a two-hour episode. I think your lack of preparation on the front side was made up for by the fact that you edited it to over 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah. No, it was pretty – and I like – well, okay, just since we're tangenting off to talking about the George Michael podcast, even though my intention – I did a little bit of what I intended to do, which is kind of provide the history or the context of the music. Really, that didn't really come into too much play. But, Jason, you drove the thing brilliantly. I mean, you kept us on track. Many, many times you kept us on track. I was impressed even listening to it. And Drew, like, set out this whole, like, he gave this description of what we were going to hear, the evolution of George Michael from a pop star to a jazz artist. And then we got to actually hear that progression, which is amazing.
Well, I'm grateful for Drew because I gave you the fanboy kind of spiel, and then Drew gave you kind of a first blush kind of or re-blush kind of exposure, maybe from a little bit of an outsider perspective. So it gave you a kind of a compare and contrast in many ways.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Worked really well.
I really, really appreciated that perspective because I can vamp, especially when it's somebody I'm passionate about. I can vamp for hours. But it's always good to have a different point of view because it helps me just I mean, I'm sure it helps other people too, but it helps me to be able to look at it in a different angle that sometimes I'm not always able to. It's not always able to get out of your own bubble.
Well, no, it was great. It was, and like I said, it was a little bit surprising because, you know, one of the things, here's a little peek behind the curtain, listeners not named Anderson. We all do a certain amount of preparation for the podcast. Most of it is, frankly, just watching the movie and either taking notes or forming strong opinions and keeping them in our steel trap minds, like Drew. I, however, need to have notes, and Brother Jay's notes are more responses than like narrative of the movie and structure and stuff. But we don't like, there are podcasts where they actually like write a script and share a script so that everybody kind of knows what is going to be said later on. Like there's an outline, which A, seems like too much work, and B, seems like it would be, I don't know, maybe if we were doing a really tight presentation, we could do that. But this is less a performance for me than it is just, you know, talking about stuff.
If we did that, we'd never have those genuine moments, like how shocked I was that that voice at the end of that song was George Michael.
Oh, my God. That was so much fun
up.
To throw in there, too, and highlight again. That's the part, yes, of editing I thought was great.
I did enjoy the chipmunks. Yeah.
Oh, I don't even mean putting the actual chipmunks in there. I just like the fact that we could play the clip, and then you could make that, yeah, again, honest moment where you're talking about how you really like the female voice that came in the end, and when Jason's like, no, it's just him. And you're like, no, it's not him. Oh, it's him. No, trust me, it's him. Yeah, because I didn't know it was just him either. Because I hadn't heard the song, actually, so I didn't know. I'm listener fresh like everybody at that point. Although, here's a little, again, behind the scenes before you get back in the movie, which I can tell Drew doesn't want to get back into. Although I'm dying to find out what part he laughed at. The introduction song just dropped in. There's, during our part, our introduction part, my little introduction where we talk about quotes, there were two ways I could have solved a problem. The problem was, I wanted to include the first part of the third line. Like, there's two verses, and then, like, a solo, and then a third verse. So I started off with the second verse, and then we talked, you're like, hey, you hear the whole second verse, because the music has, the song has great funky lyrics. I mean, they're totally overreaching. They were trying to be so The Doors, and they were not The Doors. But, so I wanted to hear the first whole, the second whole verse, and then during the solo part, we do our introduction. But the introduction turned out to be like maybe 7 seconds too long, and it skipped my favorite whole line in the song, which was, it was totally shoved in, like Tom Lehrer talks about folk songs, where they use too many syllables at the beginning of a line in this case, where he talks about, he comes out of, the quote I think is, someone wrote April Fools in big black letters on a dead end sign. Like, somebody thought that imagery was just amazing. April Fools on the back of a dead end sign. There is no reason for it. It's just, again, a piece of imagery that to me sums up the whole song. So I needed to have that in there. So I tried to fool around and shorten the quotes a little bit. Like, I shortened the Steve Martin quote, so I didn't put, that'll make it so much easier for the listener. And I quoted cut the Alec Baldwin quote, so it just basically says, you think I've got a God problem? I am God. But I couldn't figure out how to cut the line, the storm coming line, and still have it be effective. So instead what I did is I restored it all to what it should have been, and I basically copied the solo. So the solo basically plays almost twice in a row during the time we're talking. And then by the time we're done talking, it goes right into that third line and off, which makes me happy. So that's all. That's the level of work I'm willing to do.
As I think I speak for Drew when I say that we are so grateful that you do all of this, because we would be sunk without you.
Yes, indeed. And also, for the first, I think, 90 to 100 seconds of your description of that, I thought you were still talking about a George Michael song.
So did I.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so, yeah. No, that was like 10 hours of editing on that George Michael podcast. I thought it was never going to
end. What is your normal, what's your normal editing?
Usually 3 times as long as whatever recording. The thing about, and the reason why I bailed on Concrete Blonde with Drew at the end of the year was because the thing about music is, so I have to get all the clips, and if it's just an album, it's like, what, 10 clips or something, and then throw in extra stuff and whatever. In this case, it was 3 albums, and I want to make sure that it's correct, but also make sure I have the notes right, so I do the notes at the same time. Like, I have, like, if you go to the website, every actual video, like, official video for the songs, I think is on there, just right there on the website. And then I have notes, reference notes that have hot links to every single piece of song we talked, every song we talked about, anything we basically talked about. If you want to click on it, you can go right to there, just right from the website. Plus, you can also listen to it right from the website by hitting play on the little player that's on there. So I'm digging our website. But in fact, you can actually watch the entire Valerie Bertinelli episode of The Hardy Boys if you go back a couple of episodes, because it's embedded in our site. So all of that takes time. Like, this one won't take as much time, because even though it's kind of like we're kind of meandering a little bit, but I still have to listen to it in real time, so it still takes at least twice as long, because you have to listen for a bit, fix a little thing, listen more, fix a little thing, listen more, fix a little thing. There's no way to speed up that process. So we can yada yada some of the rest of the movie. And basically, we have the whole scene about where this is actually taken off of a real story that one of the Coens had heard of a friend of theirs that got their car stolen. And when they got the car back, it had the guy's homework in it. And so he and his buddy went to the house of the people with the briefcase that was full of what looked like evidence bags and the homework, and tried to get the kid to crack, but he wouldn't crack.
That scene with the iron lung.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the real story, it was a hospital bed in the living room. But the iron lung just makes it like one step more self-indulgent, let's say.
That much more over the top.
And I love the fact that, you know, he takes the golf club, or the, what is it?
Corvette.
Yeah, was it a golf club or is it just like a crowbar?
I think it was crowbar.
But he keeps saying over and over that that's what you get when you fuck a man in the ass. And in the TV edit, they say, he kept saying, that's what you get when you meet a man in the Alps.
Wow. Which
makes me so happy. Did you know that
that would have made me laugh out loud.
Having never met anyone in the Alps, I'm not aware of that.
Apparently, it's very disturbing. You know about that, what is it? It's not Angel Video, because I'm sure that's a porn production company. But, you know, there's Mormon video services that will take out sex and violence from movies.
Didn't they? Weren't they ordered to cease?
Exactly, they were, which is very interesting. Apparently, in Utah, you have to have a Zion wall between where you serve your alcohol and where you mix your alcohol. Like, bar patrons cannot see where their alcohol is mixed by law.
Well, there's a whole, having been to Utah many times on business, never for pleasure, they have like 3% beer. And if you go to a bar, you cannot have more than one drink in front of you at a time. And you may not order another drink until the drink you have is entirely consumed. And you can only have that drink if it's, I think, one, you can have a maximum 1 ounce of alcohol.
Yeah, at a time. No matter how big the drink is.
Unless you become a private member of a club where you are in a secure, secluded area where you're not seen. You pay a special fee for that.
Yeah, kind of like what they're going to do with marijuana clubs.
Also, liquor is really expensive in Utah.
Oh, yeah, it's all state-controlled, right? I mean, I know there are a lot of states like that, but...
And they have blue law, so you can't buy liquor on Sunday at all.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, when I would go to Utah on business, I would bring alcohol in my suitcase.
You're killing me, Drew. He just nods. Yeah, it's an audio podcast. You can't just nod and say, that sounds quite reasonable.
I keep forgetting. Sorry.
Yeah. So, by the way, did you notice that the song that was playing when we first met Jesus?
No.
It was the like a Mexican version of Hotel California. Soy vos el corredor y yo te dije de siempre.
Welcome to the Hotel California. Oh, I did notice that.
Which, as it turns out, the dude hates the Eagles.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, this is where... Yeah, sorry. We get to meet the stranger again at the bar. And that's where we get the wisdom of sometimes you eat the bar, and sometimes the bar, well, he eats you.
But he's saying bear.
Yes, yes.
Which is not obvious to me until I saw the subtitles.
Ah, yeah. No, it was that was basically the only thing that rang false, is he shouldn't have been so he should have been a little bit more bear-like in his bar thing. Like, I think a Wilford Brimley could do the bar comment a little better.
The sugar bar.
I know, it's almost sacrilege to say that Sam Elliott is not the best.
He is the best. He played one of the villains on the TV show Justified during one of the, maybe the last season. And he had no mustache.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. It was uncanny.
Yeah, it was just simply not acceptable.
It was disturbing.
Yeah, it looked weird. It was more disturbing than the first time I saw Dad without a beard.
Yeah. So then we get to the car crash scene where the dude drops his joint in his lap. Which just, to me, is just hysterical. It's a little piece of comedy. It's hilarious. His car by this time is trashed beyond belief.
Yeah.
And this is where we find out the kid's homework in the car. So then we flash to the landlord's dance recital. And we also learn that Larry Sellers, who's the kid whose homework they found, lives next to the In-N-Out Burger. Which is kind of fun.
Because they're all eating In-N-Out on their way back from the car Corvette smash-up debacle. Yes.
And I love the fact that Walter is impressed that Larry's father wrote 156 episodes of the show Branded, which I'm sure is not a real show. Okay, am I sure it's not a real show?
I wasn't sure, but I didn't really care.
Yeah, so then we have them beating up the Corvette, which they assume that he had bought for his money. Oh, you know what? Branded is a real show.
I don't think there are that many episodes of it.
There are
48 episodes.
Chuck Connors.
Mm.
The Rifleman.
48 episodes.
So again, Walter is unhinged. And then, of course, the real owner of the car comes out. Just, you know, you could see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the scene of the dude nailing the board into the floor. So he can put the chair against it as his home defense system because people keep breaking into his house.
Yeah, he brilliantly puts the chair against the door that opens outward. Exactly.
And that's where you meet Jackie Treehorn, Ben Gazzara from Roadhouse. The dude later describes him as a man who treats objects like women. But what do you think of Jackie Treehorn's house? Like
it was amazing.
His cement furniture?
It was so retro chic.
It's crazy.
I was so bored at this point in the movie that it didn't even register.
Cement furniture.
Even the big like beach party?
Yeah, I was just waiting for some sort of resolution at this point.
So,
like, I had no time. I had no time for Jackie Treehorn. I had no time for the Malibu Sheriff. I had no time for the Eagles loving cabbie. I did like the fact that he tripped over that board when he got back home.
Yeah, it's the little things. Did you laugh out loud?
Mm-hmm. No, I did not.
So, by the way, whose toe was that?
That was the nihilist girlfriend's toe.
The German.
Oh, they eat at the diner, right? They're eating waffles or whatever. It's hilarious.
Pigs in blankets.
Her only purpose of being in the movie was to have a missing toe.
Hilarious. So the dude returns home, finds out his apartment has been trashed. But then we find Maude, who seduces the dude.
And then tries to increase chance of conception.
by jiggling around crazy all night.
Which is hilarious. So the dude ends up calling Walter to pick him up and take him to the Lebowski mansion right away. Even though Walter doesn't drive on Shabbos unless it's an emergency.
Doesn't even answer the phone on Shabbos unless it's
exactly,
an emergency.
Exactly, yes. You know, you have that, what is it, your oven? Doesn't your oven
yes.
have the Sabbath feature?
Yeah. Yes.
So you don't have to actually do work on the Sabbath?
It sounds awfully convenient for when you convert.
Yes.
But yeah, after talking with Maude, the dude has an epiphany about who actually has the money. And it's the Big Lebowski.
Exactly. There was never any money in the suitcase. The nihilists weren't going to get the money. It was all about the Big Lebowski stealing the money. So, we've had this guy in a Volkswagen that's been tailing the dude for but the second third of the movie. And we believe that he is Defino, played by John Polito, one of my favorite actors from Miller's Crossing, who compliments the dude on being such a great private eye, working teams against each other and playing both ends against the middle. And the dude is like, no, dude, I'm just the dude. So I think that's the nod to the Big Sleep. Is like, anyway, we find out that
how clever
that Defino is actually working for the Knutsons, Bunny's family, because Bunny is like 17 years old or something. Oh yeah, Amy Mann is the nihilist with the missing toe. Singer Amy Mann.
That was Amy Mann.
Yep,
I had no idea that was Amy Mann.
Yeah, me neither.
Co-founder of Till Tuesday. So, blah, 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 blah. Did you enjoy the big dream sequence? You did not.
I did not. Maybe if it had come an hour earlier in the movie.
Well, he was dressed up like the log jamming cable guy and the Busby Berkeley girls with the bowling pin headdresses and the nihilist with the scissors. Scissors, scissors, scissors.
Yeah, no, I got it. I understood what was happening. I just didn't find it entertaining at this point.
Did you enjoy when Walter tried to call bullshit on the Big Lebowski's need for a wheelchair? No.
Okay, here's the thing, what I think about this movie. I think it suffered from heightened expectations. And I think
It certainly did because it came after Fargo, and people expected another Fargo.
Well, and it's achieved such like a cult status nowadays that going into it for this viewing, I expected to be blown away, and I wasn't. But I think the biggest thing is this is a movie that I don't think it would be best enjoyed watching by myself. I think it would be better enjoyed watching in a group, you know, where you could kind of have fun, you know, enjoying some of the wackier elements, you know. So a movie like Reservoir Dogs, I think is a pretty good movie. But if you watch that with a couple buddies who have, sort of the same sensibility, I think that movie becomes a whole different experience. Much more of a comedy. Tropic Thunder, I think, is best enjoyed with at least one other person.
Oh, you're going to have a problem with DC Cab, I think.
Well,
you have nostalgia behind your back.
I'm certain I will have nostalgia associated with that. But yeah, I think for this movie, watching it by myself, taking time to do it, you know, for a little bit more like work than I think I would otherwise have experienced this movie. I think that really made the movie suffer for me. And it's not my style of movie to begin with.
You're going to have a problem with Octopussy also.
Well, I have problems with the James Bond movies in general. So I think that that's probably one of my biggest problem with this movie is the way I watched it is probably not the best way to experience it. Like, imagine if you have never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show and you watch it for the first time by yourself.
I think that's how I watched it the first time.
Yeah. So I think that that's a more extreme example of this, but you know, I think if you could get the enjoyment of having some fellow audience members laughing at some of the absurd moments in the movie, it might pick you up a little bit. Might have picked me up a little bit than just watching it by myself and thinking, oh, another wacky scene. Okay, let's go.
So what you're saying is you need to make some friends before you watch this movie. Not you, I mean the audience.
Yeah, no, I mean me specifically. I think for me to enjoy this movie, I would have to have friends.
It's not,
and since I don't.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
This movie, it's horrible.
No, it's not worth it.
it's not worth it to make friends just to enjoy the
exactly.
movie.
Exactly. Yeah, too much trouble.
It does sound like a lot of work.
Yeah. Let me tell you.
It's very nihilistic.
So I don't know about nihilistic. Anyway, unsocial. So what do you think about the death of Donnie?
It was a bummer.
Unexpected.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's because I was expecting it, because it wasn't the first time I saw it. You actually see Donnie, like, he missed a strike for the first time in the movie. And he's, like, he's puzzled, and he's having, like, hand issues and stuff, and maybe arm pain. And so you can see his heart attack coming on, which I think is pretty fun.
Oh, see, I didn't even connect the dots.
Yep, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, to me, he sold it really well. Also, he was the narrator of the book Motherless Brooklyn, or not the narrator, the reader of the audiobook Motherless Brooklyn, which is a noir tale told by a guy with Tourette's, and in a really kind of respectful way. Very interesting. So we have Walter versus Nihilus. We have they finally killed his car. They set his car on fire.
Well, they have that hilarious scene in the parking lot with the techno boombox playing.
Oh, it's awesome. And okay, so I know Flea didn't technically do a great job acting or anything, but it was just fun. I mean, in this context, he did a fine job.
Yeah.
He, by the way, may be a very interesting guy. I don't know.
Who are you talking about?
Flea. The bassist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, no, I do not think Flea did a good job.
Yeah. No, I don't think he did a good job either. But I thought
he was Flea
fun.
Was some horrible, horrible, distracting stunt casting.
I didn't think it was horrible. I just thought it was fun. It worked for me.
It did not work for me. I was like, hey, you look like a weirdo. I've heard you can do a shitty German accent. Let's put you in the movie. It'll be great. It was not great.
So, is sarsaparilla really a drink, and what does it consist of?
Yes. It's a root, I believe.
But is it like root beer? I mean, when can you order a sarsaparilla someplace?
So, in other countries, it is root beer is sarsaparilla.
So, it's just interchangeable?
No. In the States, you can't get sarsaparilla, I don't believe.
Huh. I mean, because I know we have, like, obviously, this is America, so we're the home of guns and microbreweries. So everybody brews their own cream soda and root beer and beer up here. Not individually, but lots and lots and lots of restaurants have microbreweries. And but yeah, you never hear the word sarsaparilla. Is it an alcoholic thing? Can you get alcoholic root beer?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose you can get alcoholic lemonade, so why couldn't you get alcoholic root beer? Does the root beer process involve fermentation? Or is it, do you carbonate root beer?
It involves brewing.
Okay. So there's some usually. Sort of alcohol content. Like any kind of fermented stuff? Like
It can, but doesn't have to.
Some people at work are going through a fermented food phase. It's not one of the more admirable phrases, yeah.
Kombucha.
Oh, my God. Yeah, people are getting their booch on.
You have to be careful because kombucha actually creates alcohol molecules.
Exactly. So, it's, yeah, God knows.
And I don't know what your policy on alcohol tolerance is at work, so.
Oh, it's little to none.
Yeah. Well, kombucha can put you over the limit.
Yeah. Well, that would be a startling revelation. She's all high on the booch, and she gets the boot.
They had to, kombucha is big here in Oregon. There's actually kombucha bars here, but, they had to reformulate a lot of them here because it turned out that they were 1% and 2% alcohol. And that was a problem.
So you couldn't buy a kombucha in Utah on Sunday?
Well, the bigger problem is it wasn't labeled, and so you'd have people like who were in recovery who would go and buy kombucha.
Children?
Or people pregnant who are women? Children or people who are on probation who aren't to have any alcohol. Who are trying to be healthy and think they're buying a health drink and then they fail their test.
Yep. So what was the other part that you laughed at, Drew?
The ashes.
No.
I think I checked out so much at that point that I was only kind of half paying attention. So when he went to go throw the ashes into the ocean and they blew back in the dude's face, maybe that was telegraphed, but it caught me off guard and I thought that was very funny. And I appreciated that it sort of ended with him finally sort of telling Walter off. I mean, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because that's what I was thinking the whole movie.
Yeah.
And he was finally speaking the words I wanted to hear.
So what did you think about the like, non-ending ending? You bump into the stranger again. How things going, strikes and gutters, ups and downs, you know, the usual. And then the dude abides.
That was fine. I don't know why that particular line became a movement, but
yeah,
that's fine.
So, Brother Jay, any more comments before we get to your verdict?
I mean, there's a couple good lines that I really like when they're in the diner and Walter's like, "You want a tow? I can get you a tow. I can get you a tow by 3 o'clock. That made me laugh out loud. Oh, and then when he's in the limo with Lebowski Sr. and Brandt, and he's like, "I just want 10% of my $500,000. So if you just give me a check for the $5,000, I'm out of here."
Dude is not a math major.
No, he's really not. So this is little stuff like that makes me laugh. Because he's a pothead, but he's a half... Right, pothead. So
I love the fact that he gets thrown into the limo that one time and doesn't spill his White Russian.
No, he's got his priorities, man.
I was wondering how many takes that took.
Yeah. So your verdict, Brother Jay?
I like this movie. I think it's funny. I think it's funny every time I watch it. So I think if you watch it a couple times, you get different layers of the funny and it becomes a little funnier. But... But I've never watched it by myself either, so Drew may be onto something when he says that it's really kind of a group experience movie.
Drew, was it worth it?
Okay, here's what I'm going to say. Either watch it in a group, or I think commit to watching it 3 or 4 times. Because I imagine, I'm not going to try this out, but I imagine if you watch it a few times, then... the really absurd parts will become funny with familiarity and not just feel like a waste of time. So is it worth it? I don't think so. But I know I'm in the minority. And yeah, I feel like I'm dragging the podcast down tonight, so I apologize for that. I'm sure it's going to get better when we go back to Bond.
I messed with the calendar. I don't think I messed up the calendar, but I messed with the calendar. So we've got some interesting movies coming up.
Indeed, I'm looking forward to it. Soap Dish.
So what did you think of the movie, Eric?
I loved it.
What are your final thoughts?
I thought it was great. It was great fun. I thought the performances were fun. I thought the movie was as brilliant as they normally do. So there weren't any surprises there. I thought John Turturro was fantastic. I thought John Goodman was fantastic. I thought all the Johns were good. John Polito. It's great. I loved it. I'll watch it again. I'll watch it right now.
Well, good for you. The dude abides.
Yeah, I don't like. Again, I don't really like the dude. I just like the world that the dude inhabits.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to like the dude, because I don't like the dude either.
So, do you have any housekeeping?
I'm getting ready to get rid of my cable box, so I'm on the verge.
Excellent.
I gotta finish clearing off some stuff, because there's some stuff I want to watch that's on there still, but as soon as the DVR is to a point where I feel I can divorce myself from the content, it's going to be gone.
As long as I had high-speed internet, I wouldn't have to have... Actually, you know what? I wouldn't even have to have a TV.
Well, and so I have a bundle package, but when I got the bundle package, I had a huge discount, and it has crept up over time. The discount has depleted, and I finally started really looking at the bill, and then I realized my bill is basically doubled.
Oh, nice.
And when I called them and I said, hey, you know, my friend just got new service and his bill is half as much as mine and we have the same service. And they're like, yeah, sucks to be you.
Nice.
And I said, well, you know, how about you just, I'll just cancel and restart my account. Like, nope, your address is already on record, so we don't do that.
Ah, nice monopoly cable company.
I was like, oh, okay.
Public utility or private utility bullshit.
Now it's Comcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to dump the cable box. I'll keep the internet because it's super fast. And it's affordable for the price. And even though they have a data cap per month, the data cap is like a terabyte. So
oh, wow. Yeah, see, my data cap is only 300, but I never use... I mean, I don't even touch it. When it was 150, it was skirting.
But the price overages, even if we hit a terabyte, I think by each 100 gig, increments only like another $20 or something. So I mean, it's not.
Yeah, that's how they do that here too. If you hit your cap, instead of just tick 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 ticking, which it used to do, they actually give you a warning. And if you want to buy more, you can. And if you don't, it slows it down to like 0.1 megabit service or whatever.
Yeesh.
Speed, yeah.
It would be more merciful just to cut you off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's the thing. Basically, you can check your email as long as you don't have any attachments.
Dial-up.
By the way, I had never heard the George Michael song Freak, and I love all that computer noise in the background. It's great.
Oh, it's one of my more favorite songs. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah.
That's why I gave it an honorable mention, because it's kind of out of place, but it needed to be mentioned because I think it's a great song.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Turns out the song I don't like, I Want Your Sex, is just a stupid song.
Well, it's gimmicky and poppy, but I agree. And Jesse and I were talking about this in the car today because he was giggling at it. He's like, this is such a goofy song. And I'm like, it's a song from a different era. And so it's out of time. It doesn't make sense today because it spoke to a very different time. And so it had a very different meaning at the time.
Well, what about, okay, I ran across a video today by the Cheeky Girls. Are you familiar with the Cheeky Girls?
I am not.
And the Cheeky song? It was in my, it was back in just post Britpop, when I was heavily involved in the Britpop movement of the very early 2000s. There's a couple of songs. One is the Cheeky Girls, and I can't remember the other one. What in the Butt was another one. Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
I said what in the butt. 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 You wanna do it in my butt? In my butt? You wanna do it in my butt? In my butt? You wanna do it in my butt? In my butt? Let's do it in the butt. Okay.
That's more on the nose, if you so to speak. But the Cheeky Girls is just hilarious. And they had a Christmas album. And any other housekeeping?
I watched Bright Lights. Have you heard of this?
Nope. Heard of Bright Lights Big City.
It's a document. I think it's called Bright Lights. It's a documentary by Fisher Stevens about Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds.
Oh.
It was slated, I think, to be released later this year on HBO, but HBO released it this weekend. And I just happened upon it because I was having trouble sleeping. So I missed the first few minutes, but I ended up watching most of it. And it was set a couple years ago. It was set when he was filming it when Debbie Reynolds got the Lifetime Achievement Award from SAG and when Carrie Fisher was starting rehearsals for Force Awakens. So it's a little older than present day. But it was pretty fascinating. And given recent events, it was really heartbreaking. I didn't realize that the two of them were so close. I mean, they lived in different houses, but on the same compound. Yeah. Even a couple years ago, Debbie Reynolds was in really, really poor health. She was really frail.
I just dig the fact that Carrie Fisher was, her urn was a Prozac tablet.
Mm-hmm. So. There's a lot of her brother in the movie. He's kind of an interesting dude.
I've never even heard of her having a brother. Never occurred to me.
I think it's worth checking out if you're at all interested. I mean, I think Carrie Fisher is really interesting just in and of herself. There's a little scene with Griffin Dunne, who I guess is a childhood friend of hers.
Yee.
He's an interesting cat.
Apparently he took her virginity.
Oh, excellent. Ugh. Oh, come on. He's my third favorite character in American Werewolf in London.
But yeah, if you're at all interested in Carrie Fisher.
Well, I don't have HBO, so.
Yeah, I imagine it'll hit Netflix at some point, or Amazon Prime. But it was really interesting because Carrie Fisher does not pull any punches, and she really speaks her mind about everything. And Debbie Reynolds is sort of the exact opposite. Even though it was really obvious her health was starting to fail her, she still was putting on a show and was still doing performances, which were like half cabaret, half lounge songs and half stand-up comedy. And a lot of interesting clips from when Carrie Fisher was much, much younger. They touched on how her mental illness affected the rest of the family. So it was interesting. I recommend it.
Now, did Fisher Stevens do it in a bad Indian accent?
No, I didn't even realize it was him until... because I watch everything with closed captioning on. And when the director would speak and ask questions, it said Stevens, you know, colon, and then whatever he said. And then at one point, he was talking to Debbie Reynolds and her alarm went off. I think Carrie Fisher was like wandering in the background and was leaving Debbie Reynolds' house to go back to her house and set off the alarm on her way out. And then so you see like the cameraman and like everybody else kind of running, scrambling around while Debbie Reynolds is like just stays put in her chair and says, "Oh, that happens a lot. I don't really know the code. I suppose the cops will be coming." And then Fisher Stevens ran in from out of frame. I was like, "Oh, that's a dude from Short Circuit."
He's actually a really good audiobook narrator as well. He and Bronson Pinchot, also noted for a bad accent.
I know, but he also sounds so different on audiobooks.
Oh, he's great.
I think Fisher Stevens has an Oscar, right?
What would he have an Oscar for? Let me find out.
The Cove or something? It's for a documentary.
Is that the dolphin one?
I think so. I hope I'm not totally making this up.
Oscar winner for best documentary. The Cove, yeah. Yeah. That was a hard movie to watch.
Yeah, it was.
Never saw it.
I can't eat seafood anyway. I don't care. But, yeah. I don't want to see animals get killed. Like a snuff movie. Like, I don't want to watch how food is made either. Don't care. So I saw a couple movies. none of them that I think you'll be interested in, but I finally saw the Kevin Smith movie Tusk with Justin Long. Are you familiar with that? Have you seen it?
I've not seen it.
It's
I'm familiar with it.
Justin Long and Haley Joel Osment are two podcasters, and they they run Notse.com, N-O-T-S-E-E, because Haley Joel Osment doesn't go anywhere, so he doesn't actually see the things. So the shtick is Justin Long goes to these places and interviews people or has adventures and then comes back to tell his friend about it. So this is all thought up in the drug-addled podcast of Kevin Smith, the Smodcast. And basically Justin Long gets kidnapped in Canada by a serial killer who wants to transform him into a walrus. It's pretty gruesome as far as the body horror toward the end, but I thought it was had some fun moments. It's where Yoga Hosers came from. There's the scene of Harley Quinn Smith and whatever her name is, Depp, at the store in Canada, and so that's they made a whole movie out of those characters. So, for good or ill, I won't be watching that movie. Not really on my. In my wheelhouse, so to speak. I watched a drama, maybe, called How I Live Now. Have you heard about it?
Mm-mm.
No, I have not.
It is, basically, it's the story of a troubled American teen sent to the English countryside to stay with relatives. Finds love and purpose while fighting for her survival as the war envelops the world around her. By the way, not World War I or World War II, but World War III. But okay. It's a little bit sappy, like teen romance kind of stuff too. But it's also got kind of this a little bit of the sentiment of like Children of Men. So don't go into it thinking you're going to get a happy ending.
Who's in it?
Tom Holland. Charisse Ronan.
Spider-Man.
Charisse Ronan was in The Grand Budapest Hotel. Tom Holland was in... Oh, yeah, he's Peter Parker. It was well acted, but like I said, it was kind of dreary. I watched the Big Sleep, which was... I'd recommend watching it, but it's not as good as the Maltese Falcon. It's got some really interesting things in it. But like I said, the plot is so convoluted that like at the end, I did not know what was going on or why we cared.
Like the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, well, I think I watched a couple other movies, but of course I can't remember them. I was really disappointed with Netflix streaming ability for horror movies because it's just crap. There's just nothing on there that's worth watching. You know, there's 20, 25 good horror movies. And the rest of them aren't even, they're not good for like purient interest. They're not good for, bad plot, but good special effects. They're not good for, interesting story, like a good, what if they had a big budget? This might be good. Nope. Just crap. And then for some reason, I just don't dig, mostly I don't really dig the religious horror because it doesn't scare me. And also pregnancy. I don't want anything to do with horror and pregnancy together.
Have you seen The Witch?
I slept through The Witch. It bored the crap out of me. Also, Crimson Peak.
Mm-hmm.
Like, period pieces, just, I don't know, generally, not so much.
All right. How about Green Room?
I have not, but I've heard it's good. With Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've heard great things about it. What was the other movie I saw? The Awakening. Like, that was an interesting movie. It's actually both a period piece and a ghost story, which, like I said, I'm not really into. But it actually was pretty good.
So that's not the Robin Williams, Robert De Niro movie?
No. No, that was like Awakenings, right?
Yes.
Sounds right.
That was just Awakenings.
The Awakening, starring Dominic West and Rebecca Hall.
Hmm. Sounds good so far.
Dominic West has, like the worst English accent ever. Turns out it's just his real voice because he's not McNutty. Yeah, I would give it, uh, I'd, 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 suggest you give it a watch if you like the horror movies. It's kind of like Red Lights, actually.
No, Red Lights was a thriller, though. It wasn't a horror.
Yeah. Well, spoiler for Red Lights that we spoiled in episode 5 or something, or 10 or whatever Red Lights was, nearly 200 episodes ago. Red Lights turns out to be mostly not paranormal, and The Awakening, it turns out that there maybe is something going on.
I really dug Red Lights. I watched it again. I made boyfriend Jesse watch it. I don't think he liked it as much as I do, but I found it eminently watchable. I've rewatched it, and I still love it a lot.
I remember liking it. Oh, absolutely. It's got everybody we like in it.
It does. So.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.